From Phoenix, this is the Catholic Conversation, helping you live your faith in today's culture. Now here are your hosts, the Cradle and the Convert, Steve and Becky Green.
Greetings in Christ, everybody, and welcome to the Catholic Conversation. I'm Steve Green, Director of Keno Catechetical Institute at the Diocese of Phoenix, and I am the Cradle Catholic.
And I'm Becky Green. I'm the Director of the Green Homeschooling Institute and everything else in our lives, and I'm the Convert to the Faith. Once again, coming to you with a story about being at Mass with children.
Pop some popcorn, everybody. You know when we start with a Green family story from Mass? Good stuff.
I like to share these stories so that our listener can feel better about him or herself.
This is our charism.
It really is.
When we've got a special gift of making other families feel better about themselves.
That's right. So the other day, we went to Mass at our local parish, and the front row was the only row that was available that would fit all of us that we had coming in based on the social distancing rule. So you have some pews that are obviously marked off, and so there's only some that are available. Yep. Some of the larger rows contained maybe fewer people, but there's a lot of us, and we had to just kind of stuff into this one row. So it was the very, very front row, which we actually like. I would prefer to be at the front during Mass.
Kids want to be in the front.
The kids actually want to be in the front typically.
But then they don't always behave very well.
They don't always behave like they belong in the front. Let's put it that way. Or at least the younger ones.
Or in a Catholic church at all.
That's correct. So we took our seats and we proceeded with the Mass, and things were going fairly well. Our four-year-old was a little bit squirrely, but we were hanging in there. And in this particular case, in order to go and receive on the tongue, they have a kneeler off to the side. So it's the only place that you're allowed to go and receive.
To go through a designated line for reception on the tongue.
So you, rather than getting up and following the normal course out of the pew with others in that particular section, we had to kind of wait and then get up and go back to the back of the church and wait in line at this other line, which meant we were farther away from our children, which means, of course, the farther you get from them, the higher the chances are. I'm sure there's like actual studies out there, but I believe there is this.
All done on our family.
Exactly. That the higher chance of them doing something disruptive.
Shenanigans
will ensue. And so we went up. You had to come back around a large section, so it was going to take a while for us to get back down. By the time I was walking after having received Jesus, I hear, rock, paper, scissors, shoe. Rock, paper, scissors, shoe. And then lots of giggling and lots of squeaks. And
two very high-pitched, squeaky little kid voices.
And I knew at that moment, I knew those are my children. And there is nothing I can do. If only I could just suddenly beam back over there, but I can't. I need to make my way around half of the church before I can get to them. And so I'm walking, like I've become like the speed walker, right? You don't want to really run because that's just going to, people are going to get a little concerned.
Did you do like that cool speed walking thing where you like have that special hip waggle?
I think so. It's kind of fun too because I've got the veil on. So it's just like, there's sort of a neat little flowing, it's kind of my cape in that moment, and I'm just trying to get to my children. And the great thing about it is that you hope that other people are thinking, oh, she's trying to get there. It's all right, she's doing the best she can. But what your fear is that you've just got dagger eyes on you, that it's like a spotlight, that this everything, the entire circus happening right there is just put on display for everyone, and all they're thinking is, what a horrible mother. Why does she have all of those children?
So meanwhile, I'm at the end of the line of greens, and so as I'm coming up, first of all, as is generally the case with me, I'm blissfully unaware of most things. So I'm coming up, and literally as I am in the process of kneeling to receive, I suddenly become aware out of the corner of my eye, catch it in my ear, that to my left are two of my children in the front row loudly playing rock, paper, scissors, shoe, which is their version of rock, paper, scissors, shoot. And so I have this decision, like, do I literally pause mid-kneel, which at my age is not likely to go well, and then like suddenly veer off and try to deal with it? But I'm like, by now, Becky is already making the return loop, and there's no way she isn't seeing this. So I figured she's probably already approaching the situation at roughly the speed of sound.
Oh, it's true.
There's going to be a sonic boom. Becky go boom. Hashtag Becky go boom. Sonic boom, other kind.
There's so many different ways that you could take that. So I got back to them, and by the time I got back to them, rock, paper, scissors, shoe had turned into like rock, paper, scissors, kick, and the feet up and everything. So I managed to separate, and,
but a lady came a up, lady she
came up after, and she was so sweet. She's like, oh, we were all just giggling. We're trying to like contain ourselves. The deacon's up there trying to, and I'm thinking, I'm sure the deacon was laughing. He's probably thinking, get him out of here. But I mean, thank God, you know, they were all very, willing to accept the failure that I felt I was and just say, hey, that's part of motherhood. You're doing the best you can. Because that's what I want to do for moms. When all my little, birdies have left the nest and I'm at mass and I see a family with young kids and all the shenanigans that go on, that I want to find that mom after mass and make sure I go up to her and just say, you're doing a great job. Because we've had the opposite. We have had the opposite. We've had the glares. We've had the dirty looks. We've had the comments. So that didn't help anybody. And it just makes Becky go boom. So speaking of failure, we actually have a book on failing, but it's called Failing Forward. Leadership Lessons for Catholic Teens Today by Alan Migliorato and Daryl Zizek.
This is going to be good. This is a new thing, failing in a forwardly direction.
Yeah, it doesn't sound right.
Yeah, I've done a lot of failing. None of it's been in that direction. So I'm glad to know this is possible. Right on my butt,
backwards.
No, and it's great because it, as the subtitle says, it's Leadership Lessons for Catholic Teens Today. So if you are a teenager, if you own a teenager, if you know someone who does, or if you're anticipating that you'll ever be associated with them in any way, you want to stick around because we'll be right back with Alan Migliorato, author of Failing Forward Leadership Lessons for Catholic Teens Today, right here on The Catholic Conversation.
The Catholic Conversation is brought to you by Morningstar OBGYN and Pediatrics, where we partner with patients and parents to provide excellent health care. Find out more at MorningstarOBGYN.com and MStarPeds.com.
And welcome back to The Catholic Conversation. I'm Steve Green, the Cradle Catholic, here with my lovely wife, Becky the Convert, and we're thrilled to be joined by Alan Migliorato, who is the author, co-author, with Daryl Dezik of Failing Forward. And first of all, I love the title. When I first saw it, I thought, what a great title for a book. I wonder what it's about. And then, of course, we started reading it. And it's this cool take on raising, particularly raising teenagers. It applies to raising kids of any age, but really written specifically for teenagers. Now, Alan, you're the founder of Adventure Catholic Leadership Formation Training. So how did you come to write this book, and why did you title it Failing Forward?
Well, Steve, the Failing Forward was not the original title that we came up with, and this is a rewrite of a book that we originally wrote that was targeting the youth ministers and people that are in youth ministry. And what we found is Daryl and I talked, and we talked to our publisher Sophia Press, who's been excellent to work with. You know, we were talking together and said, you know, really our target is parents, because you're the first catechist. As a parent, you are the first catechist for your children, and I know we like to throw our children's faith on the shoulders of others at times, but we can't do that. And so we rewrote this book, Failing Forward, because teens need to know how to fail. Kids in general need to know how to fail, because they need to know how to get up from that failure. And too often we lie to them and tell them, you know, oh yeah, you came in, you got a trophy. Well, there was four teams and four teams got trophies. So yeah. did you really get a trophy? And so it's about speaking the truth with love and learning to, you know, make amends with your mistakes. And it really plays into us being Catholic too, with our you know, going to confession and making a mistake and admitting that mistake and learning from it and moving on.
Yeah, that is the piece that really kind of hooked me, because usually when we first get a book, we'll try to do the quick scan, the quick skim of just kind of get the overall layout and look at table of contents if we can. And just get an overall general understanding of what is this going to be about. And then we try to dive in and get as much
covered as possible for the interview. And what I appreciated is there's a twofold mission with this book that resonates with me as a mom of kids, and I'm homeschooling my kids, and we have a wonderful community that we're in, and we're really trying to create the environment for our children to not just grow up and thrive as citizens and, you know, accomplish things and go out and pursue their dreams and be willing to work hard and, yes, be willing to accept those times when you fail. But the number one priority, of course, is that they stay close to their faith, that they cling to Christ, and that no matter what happens to them in life, no matter where they do fail, no matter where they do succeed, that always they're moving forward in their faith journey, and that they want to be leaders in that they want to be willing to defend it, that they're willing to stand up for it, that they're willing to practice it even when it's hard. And that particular twist on this book was what I appreciated, because it isn't just about making sure they do know how to go and make a dinner for everyone, which I just love. I can't wait. Steve and I were talking about that particular challenge of, like, we're going to assign Michael the challenge to make the family dinner for us. This is going to be really fascinating. This is going to be a really interesting experience. I think he's going to do all right, but it's going to be fun to observe the whole process. But how you then tie that back to, at the end of the day, the most important thing is that they are willing to understand and appreciate the responsibility that's on themselves and take ownership over their failures, and then to be able to get up and, you know, learn something from it and move forward. And that is the most important thing we can do as Catholics, is to remember we have all of these beautiful gifts of our faith that are available to us to help us have that particular ethos. And in this particular day and age, that's extremely important, where there's a lot of throwing blame and a lot of entitlement and a lot of acting like your problems are somebody else's fault. And so all of that is just a beautiful way that you present this. And it's really well organized and makes it very easy for those of us who are parents who just kind of want someone to say, give us some examples of what we can do so that I can try this with my kids. What was for you as you were developing this, what was really the motivation behind this particular angle? And talk about the whole COPEC, that model of challenging, observing, process, evaluating, and then challenging again.
Right. Great question. So the motivation behind this was when we do leadership training, leadership formation training. So it's not just teaching leadership. It's also teaching them how to be better formed in their faith. And a lot of, you know, when you go to the seminary, priests go through a formation period, you know, and that your formation training. And so we've kind of adopted some of the things that we do there, and, you know, speak the truth with love and focus on God. And the motivation here was when we would send teens home from our you know, week-long camp experience that we do, our intensive four-day camp, the parents would say, what did you do with my kid? Like, this is not my kid. My kid was sloppy. My kid didn't do their homework. My kid was doing bad in school. My kid didn't want to go to church. You know, my kid would argue with me every Sunday morning when we were getting up to go to church. And now he's waking me up saying, hey, let's go. You know, we got to get up and go to church. And no, we can't eat before we go because we got to wait an hour before we eat. And it's not that we're drilling this into their head, but my motivation with doing this was that as kids grow up and they become young adults, parents aren't there for them to help them be leaders. And if we don't teach our kids to be leaders now and allow them the opportunities to fail in a safe environment at home, they're going to experiment with failure and not know how to recover from it as they grow up and move on to college and beyond. And that's setting them up for failure. And so instead of setting kids up for failure, I say we allow them to fail now. So we've created this COPEC method. It's COPEC. And it stands for challenge, observe, process, evaluate, and challenge again. And those are the five steps of our method, and they're outlined in the book, but we can go through them. But it's really important to understand that you can't read this book one time and put it down and expect, you know, to master this. This is a method that's got to be practiced. You know, it's like you practice law, you practice medicine. We practice our faith. We also have to practice at being parents and raising our children, you know, to keep God as a focus in their life. And there's huge challenges ahead for parents of teenagers that are getting ready to go off to college, or kids that are about to be teenagers. There's even, like you guys were saying, you know, you have some that are about to be teenagers. It's amazing, you know, when you talk to some parents who have had recent teens, kids that have become teens recently, it's amazing the stress that the parents put on themselves. And this book really kind of shows parents that your kids aren't afraid to fail. Most parents are afraid to see their kids fail because they think that it reflects badly on them as a parent. And so really, this book is about helping parents get over themselves a little bit and know that it's okay for them to fail and be honest with their children about their failure.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a great point. We're talking to Alan Migliorato, who is co-author with Daryl Dzyk of Failing Forward. Alan, I'm also a recovering youth minister and the proud parent of a teenager and a soon-to-be teenager. I also taught high school theology, so I've spent a lot of time around teenagers, and so much of what's in the book just rings true because it has that, you know, it comes obviously from your real life experience of working with kids in this age group. And I think there are so many ways that let's use the language that we're using here. There's so many ways that we fail teenagers in how we prepare them and how we teach them and how we form them and how we educate them. And a lot of it has to do with sort of this dumbing down of everything, this softening of everything. We're constantly providing them with a crutch. I'm just interested in your thoughts because, you know, you sort of lived a lot of the same life here, having been a youth minister and all that stuff. What are in your view and in your experience some of the basic assumptions on the part of parents, some of the basic assumptions on the part of youth ministers, some of the basic assumptions in reality, even on the part of the church, about teenagers, about this group, this age group, this demographic, that really undermine a healthy process of forming them for strength, forming them for competence, forming them for confidence in their faith and in their abilities. What are some of those assumptions that you've seen and experienced, and where do you think they come from, and what's some of the damage that they do? Because I think they're there, but I don't think that we examine them a lot or think about them a lot. And I think this book is a great help to begin looking at those assumptions and questioning them and examining them.
So your question, I love it because, you know, we talk about what are our assumptions, but I think when we assume things about people, we also mix it in with what we hope will happen, right? So let's use giving a kid a challenge as making dinner for a challenge, okay? Because you mentioned that one earlier. So let's assume you give your teenager a challenge. You're going to make dinner this weekend for the entire family, right? Now, your assumption is that he's going to go, are you crazy? You know, like, what do you mean I'm going to make dinner? I've never even touched the stove. I barely even know the difference between the stove and the refrigerator, right? That's the assumption. The hope is that he's going to say, awesome, I'll order pizza, right? Because you don't want him to fail either. You don't want to have raw chicken, you know, and French fries that are still frozen for dinner. And so that the assumption is that you're going to fail as a parent because you're going to step in when something goes wrong. So we're doing an interview. Daryl and I were doing an interview a while ago, and the lady we were doing an interview with, she goes, oh, I have a 15-year-old son. And we said, well, I'll tell you what, this is great because we want you to give him a challenge. The next, and we were going to do a series of interviews, one about each chapter. And I said, we're going to start with C. So C is for challenge. you're going to give your son a challenge of making dinner. She goes, fine. So the next time we talked to her, we said, how'd it go? She goes, well, it ended up okay. She goes, but I did catch myself stepping in. And I said, well, how did you step in? And she said, and this lady was, you know, youth minister as well in the past and very much, you know, along the same cut of cloth as we are. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, I told him he was going to make dinner. And what was strange was that he said, okay, well, what do you want me to make? And she goes, and I found myself telling him what I thought he should make. But, well, that's not a challenge. We're creating robots at that point, mm-hmm. you know? And the most uncomfortable thing in the world is to say, okay, well, you're making dinner. Okay, well, what do I need to make dinner? I don't know. What do you want to make? You know, and it's kind of like parents are like, you know, I don't want to shrug my shoulders at my kid and say, you know, figure this out because I don't want them to hate me. Well, we're not trying to create best friends. And even with my best friend, I wouldn't do that because I respect them too much. And so I respect my children as well. And so when I tell my kids, listen, here's what I need. Well, I don't know how to do that. Okay, well, how would you learn? I mean, how would you learn to do what I'm asking you to do? How would you learn if this was a life or death situation? How would you learn? And so I ask a lot of questions, and really the style comes from Jesus. You know, when he would do his ministry, is that he would ask a lot of questions, and it would kind of make you think, and it would make you, you know, dive deeper into your soul a little bit, and that's what this is about, is diving deeper inside and pulling out these answers so that, you know, your kids can do this on their own. It's really not about them making a perfect dinner. Who cares? If they blow dinner, who cares? You know, they failed, but they need to know that they failed.
Yeah. I love this whole philosophy because I think it's something that parents really do desire to adopt, and you fall into the pitfall before you even know you're falling into it of that reminder, you know, just that little bit of, you could even call it nagging, you know, I said we're leaving in 10 minutes. So just making sure that you've got everything covered, like your teeth brushed and your shoes on and, you know, that bed made. And I'll catch myself saying things like that. And then I'm like, darn it, that's not, I am enabling, I am providing a crutch because I've just once again pointed out the things I'm expecting and I'm leaving it in your hands, but I've given you that little voice that is not going to be there in a few years. It's not going to be there reminding you to do those things. That's got to be on you. And to be able to step back and allow them to, you know, miss the car ride leaving to go where they need to go. Or like you said, to have the dinner fail. And then what I think the biggest lesson for us as parents is then what happens after that. Because there is a approach here, as you said, with the questions. And I'd like you, if you'd be okay with it, to maybe draw the distinction between this idea of, I guess, false praise or flattery and encouragement, because there is a big gap. People want to just give everybody the blue ribbon. Oh, your team won, even though it didn't win. And, you know, nobody's keeping track. Did you have fun? Did you do okay? Then, and there's this sense to just say, sure, yeah, you got a beautiful voice. You definitely should, you know, go on American Idol. No, she shouldn't. No, she shouldn't. Like, let's not do that. Let's not encourage that, because that is just, that's setting up for this. It, sure, it would be failure, but not that healthy kind of failure. It would be, it's sort of trying to imply that no matter what they do, it's great. And you give an example in the book about some teens that had made some cookies and they used grandma's recipes, but they misread it. And how grandma handled that made all the difference in whether or not they can actually then succeed the next time they're challenged to make those cookies versus feel like it just went fine and nobody ever says anything about what they tasted like, because we want them to just feel good about the fact that they took the challenge. So can you talk about this after the challenge is accepted? What is this process of evaluating and processing? And talk also about the observation piece, because I love the fact that you said we're like famous zoologists watching our favorite animals. Like, that's a perfect description of just observing your teenager do their thing. I'm just a zoologist here. I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and just watch them in their natural habitats doing their thing. So take that in whatever direction you want to go, Alan.
Well, you're 100% right. I think it's so important to know that balance between praise, you know, and false praise. And I don't ever, like, my kids know, if you don't want to know the truth about something, don't ask dad, you know, don't ask my wife too. She's like, used to ask me when we were first married, what do you think about this dress? And I'm like, well, would you really want to ask me that? I'll really tell you, you know, and it's not flattering, you know? And so she would be like, oh my gosh, don't you have any, you know, social awareness? And I'm like, yes, but my truth comes first. I have to speak the truth. If I don't tell you, everybody else is going to tell each other. So I got to tell you. And so, like, we've learned, like, she hardly talks to me anymore. No. So the hardest part, I think, of this whole step, it's easy for parents to give the challenge. I don't think that that's the very challenging step for parents. Teens really love a challenge. They just, you know, they're not offered them very often. The observing is probably the hardest thing. I'll be honest with you. I failed last night at something, and I'll share that with you. My oldest daughter, she's 23 today, is her birthday, and her boyfriend, right, they were over at my house, and when she still lives with us, but her boyfriend came over and they wanted to paint this furniture that I had built for the backyard. So I'm watching them paint this and it's driving me crazy, you know, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, why, you know, let me paint 3 inches over here and I'll walk over to the other side and paint. Then I'll use the roller and I'll go against the grain, you know, and I'll use the brush and I'll go, you know, and I'll stop halfway through painting one color and I'll grab another paintbrush and paint another color while the paint hardens on the paintbrush from the first color. And I'm watching them and I'm like, I made me like, I wanted to get up and I go, guys, you're driving me crazy. When you paint something, right? And I'm watching myself fail. So my middle daughter, who's really good at calling me out on stuff, she's kind of sitting by me and she goes, so you're going to step in and fix this before they fail, right? And I was like, oh. And I was like, okay, all right, fine. And she does that all the time. And she's right. I mean, and I love that my kids call me out on stuff. You know, most parents don't enjoy that. But I think it's the way that it's done. It's like, Dad, you're preaching, you know, for people to let their kids fail. And you won't let, you know, Angela paint the bench in the wrong direction. You know, she's like, what's the worst that's going to happen? And I was like, yeah, you know, you're right. You know, you're 100% right. It's so easy to fall into seeing somebody do something in a way that you would never do it, or you know that is inherently wrong. And I'm going to use the word wrong loudly and boldly, because there's a right way and a wrong way to paint a bench. But it doesn't mean that it's not going to get done. And it doesn't mean that it's not going to be done in the end, but it's going to be done their way, not your way. And so once they do it wrong, they'll learn. And at that point is when, you know, when you can give your evaluation, or they process through it, is the next step. So if I was giving my younger teen a challenge like that, I would say, okay, your challenge is to paint this bench, and I would let them go. And if, while they were doing it wrong, if I was doing the job right, and they were doing my job right and they were doing their job wrong, I wouldn't say anything. I would just watch it happen. And afterwards, when, you know, the process, I would say, so how did you think this went? How did it go painting the bench? What kind of challenges did you face? And they might say something like, well, you know, the paint wasn't really sticking down very well. And I'm not sure why, you know, the paintbrush hardened in the middle of us painting these two colors. And, you know, and at that point, after that, I could, you know, you ask a lot of questions in the process stage. When we get to evaluate, it's like, okay, so here's what I noticed. Not that you painted the bench in the wrong direction, but here's what I noticed. You lost focus. You painted some over here, then you painted some over there. That's why the paintbrush hardened. You know, those kind of things. And then the challenge again would be, so the next time that you do this, what will you do different? And let them answer that question. Well, I would paint one color completely. Great, because we have three more benches to paint, and now you can use the knowledge that you've learned from failing and correct your mistakes.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense, or was that too quick?
That's exactly it. It's just it's. I think what it does is, as I said before, I think we all know this, but when you just break it down in a very logical system of just kind of remembering these points, you can catch yourself, as you did, or perhaps as your daughter reminded you how to catch yourself, you can catch yourself in those moments. This is an observation moment, but I've stepped into processing, or I've stepped into evaluating, and I'm trying to stop the end result from happening before it happens. And we can talk about this after to kind of just remind yourself that you can talk about this. It's not going to be we just let the dinner be what it was, or we let the bench sit there as it is, but there will be an opportunity to revisit it. And that is also that establishment of relationship. That's this whole thing is also about forming these relationships with your children, where you have this kind of dynamic where they can trust you with that feedback, and they can also trust that you're going to be there, but they're allowed to fail. It's that this idea of failure is just so lost on our culture, I think.
But, you know, I don't think that I answered your question completely. Listen, I'm Italian and I have three daughters, so my mind's usually all over the place, and I'm usually talking with my hands. So I'm sure I didn't answer the whole question that you asked me originally, well, I think, was...
Hold on, Alan, because the good news is you get a whole second half that you can come back and ramble all you want and go in any direction you want to go. But we're gonna take a quick break here, and then we'll be back, and you can take it away, and we'll carry on with this question and many, many more. So sit tight, don't go away. We'll be right back here on the Catholic Conversation with our guest Alan Migliorato.
The Catholic Conversation is brought to you by Morningstar OBGYN and Pediatrics, where we partner with patients and parents to provide excellent health care.
Hello, I'm Dr. Erica Kreller. As an obstetrician and gynecologist, I often see women suffering from polycystic ovary syndrome, or PCOS. They may notice irregular periods, acne, increased body or facial hair. They may notice irregular periods, acne, or increased body or facial hair. They may have been told that their ovaries weren't functioning properly, and as a result may have difficulty achieving pregnancy. Hormonal imbalances can put them at higher risk for uterine cancer. Women with PCOS often struggle with increased weight and have an increased risk of prediabetes or diabetes. Because of its uncertain cause and its complex nature, PCOS can be a frustrating diagnosis to carry. Using NAPRO technology, we can treat PCOS in a way that cooperates with a woman's cycle. NAPRO techniques can improve health and restore normal ovarian function. If you or someone you know suffers from PCOS, please come see us at Morningstar OBGYN. Visit our website at morningstarobgyn.com or call us at 480-355-8525.
Find out more at morningstarobgyn.com and mstarpeds.com.
And welcome back to the Catholic Conversation. I'm Steve Green, the Cradle Catholic, here with my lovely wife, Becky, the convert. And we're pleased to be joined by Alan Migliorato. He is the co-author with Daryl Dzik of Failing Forward Leadership Lessons for Catholic Teens Today. So, Alan, when we went to the break, you were talking about, Becky kind of asked you sort of a three-part question just to make sure she's keeping you on your toes. But one of the elements in that question was just the differentiation between flattery or false praise and genuine encouragement that's actually attached to an accomplishment or a challenge met and overcome. So I want you to grab that and run with it for a second. But real quick, just for our listeners who are playing along, where can they find you and all the good work you're doing? Where can they find the book?
So the best place to get the book and find out a little bit more about my ministry is at adventurecatholic.com. And you can also get my other book there, which is The Manly Art of Raising a Daughter.
Nice. Oh, excellent.
So, yeah, the question that I wanted to make sure that I got to was what the difference between false praise and encouragement. And I think our kids know when they don't do well at something, when they're really not good at something, and we tell them that they are. And that's such a harmful way to raise a child at any age, even from, you know, the youngest, you know, did I do good? Well, I saw that you tried hard, you know. Well, was I better than everybody else on the football field? No, you weren't, but you did great. I thought that you did your best. Do you feel that you did your best? You know, and that's an important question to ask our kids too, is how do you feel that you did? It helps them be honest with themselves, you know, it was a question that my middle daughter used to hate me to ask her, because most kids hate to answer that question, honestly, because they know the answer, you know, and right. A lot of times it's like, well, how do you feel that you did? And I feel that you wouldn't be asking me how you did if you didn't want me to give you false praise on something. I feel that you know how you did, but you want me to tell you that you did great, but I love you too much to lie to you about something. So I'm going to tell you that it wasn't your best performance, but I'm proud of you for not giving up and walking off the court, you know? And those are questions that our kids need to know, that we still love them even when they fail, and that they did fail. So yeah. No, not everybody gets a trophy. Yeah, years ago, I coached in the Catholic Youth League over here in the Orlando area, and they stopped keeping score one year. And I was like, what's happening? Because they had a coaches meeting, and I was like, what do you mean we're not going to keep score? And they're like, well, we don't want anybody's feelings to get hurt. And I'm like, what? I didn't even know what to say. Like, I was kind of dumbfounded. So the first game, you know, the soccer game, where, you know, kindergartners, first and second and third graders, they're keeping score. They're like, hey, we got three. And it's like, the kids know.
Yep.
They know, you know, they know. It's like playing on the street corner basketball with your friends when you're a kid. Like, you know what the score is. You don't have to have a scoreboard, but they know. And for us to pretend that everybody, you know, got equal is not right. Yeah. That's just not the way it is. And it transitions into our faith, because as harsh of a truth as it is, not everybody's going to make it to heaven.
Exactly.
Yep.
And, you know, we lie, and it gets to our, well, yeah, it's okay for you to take that road, and, you know, and it's not really a sin, and, you know, it's something that you really want to do, and as long as you're happy. And we tell our kids these lies, and it's, you know, our faith is not about being happy all the time. I mean, it's about being joyful, but not instantaneous happiness. And we fake these things. It's like fake feelings that we pretend are going to lead to, you know, to a heavenly existence someday. And we got to be real with our kids and real with ourselves and say, no, this is wrong. There is a right and wrong, and Jesus is the way to heaven. And, you know, we're not leading that life, you know, with the choices that you're making.
Yeah. And that, you know, there's a reality in the middle of all that too, that I think some people notice it. And I think a lot of people notice it when they bump up against it in some kind of problematic form or fashion, but they don't know enough. They haven't been formed well enough to name it. And I think what all this sort of erasing of standards and not allowing anyone to fail and calling any outcome a success, you know, just doing all the mental gymnastics to make sure that Junior feels great about his really crummy performance there so that his feelings aren't hurt, that all backflows into the culture of relativism that we all live in. Because, of course, if there are no standards, I mean, if you can't ever fail, that means that there is no standard. And if there is no standard, then what's the standard? Well, then you are, your feelings are. Well, I feel like I should get a trophy. Okay, well, you might feel like you should get a trophy, but here's the thing. The other guy, you know, scored 40 more points than you did on his team. And so, sorry, no trophy, kid. You know, try better next time, or if this is the best you can do, then you might want to explore chess. It's
right.
But the reason I say that is because the culture of relativism, of course, as we all know, just constantly seeks to make the way we feel or the amount of effort we're willing to put in or kind of whatever we think the best outcome should be for us in a given situation, that becomes the standard, which means that the standard is no standard at all. It's just constantly fluid. And then that allows a person, it trains a person to dumb down their performance, to hold themselves to no standard. And as Catholics, we know everything has a standard, right? There's a standard for how to live your nature as a sexual person, right? There's a standard for marriage. There's a standard for moral conduct. There's a standard for honest business dealing. There's a standard for doing good work. There's a standard for how you treat other. But in a culture of relativism, all of that's removed. And so everybody is just sort of freelancing the standard all the time, according to whatever they feel or however much effort they're willing to put in, which is just, and then of course, newsflash to nobody, look at the culture we live in. It's a dumpster fire. You can't live that way. And yet we're honestly making that attempt. So Alan, I ramble. I say all that to just, again, in your experience, what has been some of the feedback that you've gotten from people who have been through your leadership training program or who have read the book and who have begun applying this to their kids, what's been some of the feedback, particularly just the difference they've seen in kids who, you know, before your program or the book had kind of been by default raised in this no standards kind of approach. And then it switches. And now we're going to give you standards. There's going to be failure and thereby the possibility for success. Well, I'm just interested in kind of what some of the feedback you've had. From that.
Well, no, I love your outtake. Your take on that is such an important thing to realize that, you know, speaking the truth with love is an important part. Let me answer your question, though, before I forget it. So the feedback that we've gotten is all across the board. It depends on the parent who's using the method, right? And I say method because you have to practice this over and over. It's not something that you try one time and say, well, hey, I thought you said this book was going to work, and I let my kid make dinner and he failed. And it's like, absolutely, that's the whole point, is that he's going to fail. You're going to acknowledge the failure. You're going to walk with him through that failure, and you're going to offer him another opportunity to succeed or fail. But either way, you're going to be honest with him. So we've received great feedback overall. I would say 9 out of 10 parents who read this book understand that you've got to use it. It's like a field guide. You know, you want it with you. You want to underline things. You want to highlight it. Write all over the book. You know, write in it. Make notes and use it. And there's a great tool for you in here, which, you know, it's a 5-step program, and it doesn't get much easier than that. It's working each step of the program that can be difficult for parents. So I think the very first thing that you have to understand is for you to be a success as a parent, you have to also acknowledge that you're failing at things as well and make some changes where necessary. And some of those things are included in this book. So for, I would say 9 out of 10 parents have been extremely successful. There are some parents, though, that refuse to acknowledge that they are at fault for things, or that their kids are not perfect and walk on water. And so at those parents, I would say, you know, at sooner or later, you can read 1,000 books, but if you don't come to terms with the reality that is, you know, the truth, then you, no matter what, this is always going to end up in failure for you. And you're never going to climb out of that, you know, that pit of despair. But we label, you know, parents get used to labeling and kids get used to labeling things. And once you say something is offensive, it can no longer be talked about anymore, you know, and it's a sad fact of the way that we've raised our kids in our community. And then we wonder as parents why we don't have, you know, more kids going to church. It's because you're not raising them right. You know, it's, you're not being honest with them. And that's very harsh. And I'm not trying to come across as, you know, finger waving in someone's face, but someone needs to shake up parents a little bit, you know, and say, look, you want your kids to be at church. You want your kids not to walk away from the faith the first chance they get when you're not there. Then you got to do some changes in your life right now. You've got to make that example of your life so that they can follow it. And not one where you're talking down to them and making them a robot. I'm saying one where you give them opportunities and challenges and watch what their outcome is and discuss things with them and, you know, be a parent. You're not a best friend. You're not, you know, you're not a boss. You're a parent. And you've got to find that balance between the two.
Our guest is Alan Migliorato, who is the co-author with Daryl Dziczek of Failing Forward, Leadership Lessons for Catholic Teens today. And I'd like you to kind of unpack that a little bit, Alan, because you make a great point in the book about Jesus doesn't approach his apostles as like a helicopter parent, which, of course, that term means a bunch of different things in different areas of parenting. You bring up an example in there of a sort of a, I don't know if it was a study or some kind of an assessment where kids were asked to paint. They were asked to paint a picture, and you observed, or those who are conducting the study observed the different parents and how they interacted or didn't interact with the children. And then how that looked on the backside of how those children typically function in the classroom. And with this idea of our faith, a lot of parents, I think there's two different approaches that we can fall into when it comes to the faith piece. Some parents take the approach, well, I don't want to impose it on them too much and make them then rebel later on. I don't want it to be too strict. I want to be understanding of where they're at and kind of let them discover it on their own. So we're not going to press it. And then I want them to be able to, you know, take ownership at a later time when it's really about their choice and not us making it a big rule in our house. So there's that side, which I don't agree with. But then there's the other side where, as you point out, you use the term robot, where it's this, the enforcement is that essentially this is what we do in our house. And maybe there aren't real discussions of the whys behind the what. Maybe there's not a real open, a positive experience of understanding the faith and why it's important. And so in those cases, you do see examples of kids just walking away the soon as they get out of the house, because they finally can just get out from under this thumb and go and be free from this thing that never made sense to them in the first place. Help us understand, when we're talking about this idea of failure and letting our kids fail and observing them and processing, but also encouraging them, not being overly critical, but being honest with them about the repercussions of their choices when it comes to practicing their faith.
Okay. Not sure where to start on that one. All right. So you mentioned the painting experiment that we did with a group of parents and their young teens or young kids, and that's a really good way for us to approach, I think, what we're trying to hit with this question. We observed a group of kids that were younger than middle school, elementary school kids, painting, and the parents were told, you're just going to go and watch your kids paint, and it's just going to be an experiment that we're doing. And we really didn't tell them a whole lot of information. We just wanted to see what their kids were going to do and how they were going to react. And it was kind of eye opening, the results that we got. There was parents who just ignored their kids completely. There was parents that were telling their kids how to paint, like, why are you painting a purple sky? There's no such thing as a purple sky, And it's like, who says there's no such thing as a purple sky, And nobody would paint their house orange, and there's no such thing as a red tree. And it's like, who cares? I mean, who really cares what color they paint this? It's just, we have this urge as parents to make sure that our kids walk such a straight line. And then let me say this, it's out of love. I think a lot of time it's misdirected love parents do this, are doing this out of. I don't ever think that parents wake up in the morning and say, let me see how much I can make my child like me today, and make their life miserable. I don't think any parent does that. Mm-hmm. But I also think that there's a lot of things that happen out of misguided love from parents that we're not aware of at times, because we haven't allowed our children to speak up and to speak the truth to us, basically because we're not speaking the truth to them and they're not sure how to do that. Hmm. So when I say that, I mean that, there's times where our kids need to talk to us about things. And if we have set up a system where if we don't think our kids are perfect, we don't want to hear about it. It's no, you're fine. You don't have to worry about that. You don't feel depressed. There's no way that my kid could be depressed and really sad about life, because he's a good kid, and we go to church and I love him and he knows I love him and he has everything that he could want. So, we tend to walk away from those things because we don't want it to be our fault. But it doesn't, we've got to swallow that pride and start talking to our kids. And a lot of times it's parents getting over their own fears. That's the hardest thing about, trying this method that I've come up with Daryl, is that, parents just don't want to face facts.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think if people are honest with themselves, when someone says something like that, they're just afraid to face the struggles and the failures in their kids, because of course then that implicates them. Well, I'm the dad, so how can I have a son that's struggling to control his temper or struggling to, to work hard and care about the quality of work that he does? Because if that's true of my son, then of course that implicates me, because who was supposed to teach him a good work ethic, or who was supposed to teach him how to control his temper, and who was supposed to model that? I think that's true. But you know what? It's interesting. And that's one of the things that I think struck both Becky and I about the book is the program that you've developed and just the concept of failing forward, of being allowed to fail. You can read the book just thinking about your kids,
But at some point, it's going to occur to you that this book is also written for and about you as a parent. And the same thing applies, right? There are challenges that we need to give ourselves as parents, and the accompanying permission to fail, right? I love the great G.K. Chesterton quote, anything worth doing is worth doing badly. And that sounds so strange when you first read it, but you immediately realize it means that you can't pull back from doing important things just because you might screw up or even probably will. Instead, you need to wade in and fail and do your best and learn from it and try again and maybe fail again. But, you know, maybe the margin of failure to success is a little tighter the second time around. But it really does. It speaks to parents, too. If for someone who's listening and who's thinking, oh, boy, yeah, I think this kind of applies to us. I think that, you know, they've got one of their teenage kids in mind, or they're thinking of, you know, themselves and their spouse. And yeah, we really have kind of been bubble wrapping everybody. And they're discouraged by that. What would you say to a parent who's thinking, yeah, I think this might apply to us, but, you know, boy, I just won't even know where to begin, or this seems just overwhelming?
Well, congratulations first to the parents who think this might apply to them, because I think that's the first step is self-reflecting and being honest about, you know, about who you are and how you're doing as a parent. The one that I would challenge is the parents that think this does not apply to me. I'm doing a great job. You know, and we should never, ever think and be complacent with our parenting. We should always look for ways to improve, always look for ways to, you know, to make our kids get closer to God. You know, there's always a way. We never stop being that parent for our children. And those are the ones that I really want to speak to. You know, and I'd like to give just a quick personal example of that, if that's okay.
Yes. Yeah, please.
So I'll talk about a failure that I had as a father. My middle daughter playing basketball, you know, growing up, I was a really good athlete, and my dad was a professional boxer. So I grew up in this professional sports, you know, home where, you know, you try hard, you practice hard. There's no such thing as second place. You know, there's no trophy for second place. Like, you know, we either won or we went back to the drawing board and figured out why we lost and how to win. And that's good. The problem is that I'm a natural athlete. My daughter is a natural athlete, but really didn't like sports as much as I thought she did. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up pushing her to play, because she's a very talented basketball player. I ended up pushing her to play basketball and pushing her and pushing her and pushing her. And she was on a very toxic team. Now, this is coming from a man who says everything is not somebody else's fault. Yeah. There's a lot of things that happened with her team and her coaches that, you know, were above and beyond a tough coach. They were just very toxic type of people that she was around. And, you know, and it was trying to force a round peg into a square hole, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. It was not good. And I didn't listen, you know, and I think that's one of the biggest things as parents that we fail at, is we don't listen. Because I didn't listen because I didn't want to be a failure. If I'm being honest with myself here, and that's what I'm asking other parents to do. And so I'm willing to admit that, you know, I failed at something with my daughter. And, you know, it came to the point where, you know, she was depressed because she just did not want to play basketball and did not want to quit because she didn't think that I wanted her to quit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that really translates, and, you know, we ended up having a talk about it, and she ended up leaving the team and not playing in her senior year. Halfway through her junior year, she left the team. But, you know, it was one of those things where I was saying things to her when I was trying to encourage her to play, like, look, God gave you this talent and you don't want to waste this talent. Well, that's not me listening. That's me trying to guilt her into playing because I think that she has a talent. You know, and as parents, now looking back, it's awful. You know, that was awful for me to say that. But at the time, I really thought that, you know, I'm encouraging her and I'm pushing her to be her best, but I wasn't listening. Yeah. And sometimes we have to listen without prejudice. We always need to listen without prejudice, but it's so important as parents to say, look, I can be a better parent. I can be. I'm doing good. I always think I'm doing good. Otherwise, I would never wake up and do something, you know, intentionally wrong. But right. It's important for us to, as parents, to say, look, let me just do a little self-check here. Let me see if I can follow this COPEC method outlined in Failing Forward. Let me see if I can do it. You know, if it's not that big of a deal, you know, if I'm a good parent, then it shouldn't be a problem for me. Maybe you're going to run into some things, if you're honest with yourself, that you can improve on, right? It's not to say that you're a horrible person. It's just to say that maybe you could do things more effectively.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That is really good stuff. And the book is just great. So as tends to happen here, we have run face first into the end of our time. So
this is mostly your fault. You guys talked all the whole time. I just can't believe it.
That is an accurate assessment, Alan.
Thank you. Thank you for reminding us that we failed at this. Yeah. And we're better next time.
Alan's challenge is next time to let our guests speak. I accept that challenge. We'll have to process how that goes.
But all the applause coming from your past guests.
good stuff. Yeah, the book is great. So real quick, as we head out, Alan, tell them where they can find the book and where they can find all the other good work you're doing.
So adventurecatholic.com. It's adventurecatholic.com. You can get Failing Forward. You can order it directly from the website, and it goes to the Sophia Press Institute, which is our publisher, and you can get the book right off of that website as well.
Awesome. Great stuff. So our guest has been Alan Migliorato, who is the co-author with Daryl Dzik of Failing Forward: Leadership Lessons for Catholic Teens Today. Thanks so much for being with us, Alan. We'll look forward to catching up with you down the road.
Thank you. God bless you guys.
You too. For the rest of you, stay right where you are, because we will be right back here on The Catholic Conversation.
Greetings in the love of Christ. This is Bishop Thomas Olmsted of the Diocese of Phoenix. Last year, the Knights of Columbus in Arizona donated 11,000 hours in service and nearly $200,000 to those in need. They support our parishes, schools, seminarians, priests, deacons, and religious. From helping children in need, to providing wheelchairs for the disabled, to helping stock food banks, the local active councils of thousands of knights have been serving Arizonans in need for more than 100 years. That's why I'm asking you today to do something bold. We need you now, more than ever, to step into the breach. Join me, my fellow bishops and priests, by signing up at www.kofc.org/joinus. Again, that's www.kofc.org/joinus. And God bless you.
Making decisions about hospice care can be a traumatic and confusing experience. Did you know it is a person's legal right to choose which hospice company will provide the support they need? A doctor, hospital, or facility cannot demand you pick a certain hospice. AmeriCare Hospice and Palliative Care is Catholic hospice. You can trust that their care will align with your Catholic faith. AmeriCare Hospice. They believe life is sacred for every person at every moment. Contact them at 480-726-7773. That's 480-726-7773, or visit AmeriCareHospice.org.
Welcome back to The Catholic Conversation. I'm Steve Green, Director of Keno Catechetical Institute at the Diocese of Phoenix, the Cradle Catholic, with my lovely wife, Becky, the convert. Oh, Failing Forward. It brings so many things to mind, like from our real life experience. We have to get better at the COPEC thing. Like that's a great method to kind of work. But I was just thinking the other day, I asked one of our teenage sons to go out and nail back in a long nail that holds our rain gutter in place on the edge of our patio roof. To his credit, he did, which was great. But as we sit here in our underground bunker on the second floor of our house, I am looking at said patio roof.
Yep.
And what's on that patio roof?
We've got ourselves a hammer.
It's a hammer.
Yeah,
just there's a hammer on the roof. Because I didn't tell him to put the hammer away. I just told him to hammer in the nail. So nail in, hammer on the roof, all is well.
That's a whole lot of work to take that hammer back to the tool bag. Are you kidding me?
Good stuff. With my sleuthery abilities, I also deduced that that means, actually I induced, that means that said teen didn't go and get the ladder
He just crawled up
there. That he climbed, he's a monkey, so he mm-hmm. probably shimmied up one of the posts, climbed onto the roof, nailed it in, looked around the neighborhood a bit while he was up there, and then climbed back down, leaving his hammer. So it's incriminating evidence left at the scene of the crime. Anyway,
oh well, we're going to be issuing some new challenges, and we'll see how that goes.
Yes, so please tune in next week for our next episode from the Quarantine Sessions with a guest to be determined. And in the meantime, thanks as always for being part of the Catholic conversation. Remember, the church has what the world needs. So learn your faith, live your faith, and...